Black Rifle Coffee Company, together with the Boot Campaign, are on a mission to raise $1 million to change the lives of veterans. Now through the end of the year, when you grab a can of ready-to-drink coffee, you can help contribute to making this massive donation possible. The Boot Campaign is one of the most renowned veteran-focused nonprofits in the country, working tirelessly to provide life-changing aid and benefits to service members and their families. Black Rifle ready-to-drink coffee is available in several great-tasting flavors at blackriflecoffee.com/Dana or at convenience stores nationwide. Whether it's the berry mocha, vanilla bomb, or espresso salted caramel, every can helps. Fuel your caffeine fix while making a huge difference in the lives of veterans and their families. Black Rifle Coffee Company is committed to serving the veteran community, and with your help, we can all continue to make a difference. Let's raise a can together and keep fueling Americans for a good cause. Visit blackriflecoffee.com/Dana. That's blackriflecoffee.com/Dana.
Here's my message. If Hezbollah, which is a proxy of Iran, launches a massive attack on Israel, I would consider that a threat to the the state of Israel, existential in nature. I will introduce a resolution in the United States Senate to allow military action by the United States in conjunction with Israel to knock Iran out of the oil business. Iran, if you escalate this war, we're coming for you.
Are you effectively poised to declare war on Iran? That's very strong language.
I am poised to use military force to destroy the source of funding for Hamas and Hezbollah. The idea that Iran read about this operation in the paper or on television is laughable. 93% of Hezbollah and Hamas's money comes from Iran. They're the source of the problem. They're the great evil. So if Hezbollah escalates against Israel, it will be because Iran told them to. Then Iran,
really,
you're in the crosshairs of the
Lindsey.
United States.
Lindsey Graham wants to declare war on all of God's green earth. It's just like his big thing. He wants to bomb all the things. It's what he wants to do. He wants to bomb everything. Welcome to the program. It's Monday. Dana Lash here with you. You can listen to the nationally syndicated radio show Coast to Coast. We got a lot of developments to touch on, which we're gonna get into. We're going to let you know the latest with what's happening to the House, the latest with Israel, because a ground invasion looks like it is imminent. And it looks like it is imminent. And so the latest with this, we're going to bring all this up for you, have it all for you. There's just a lot to hit because you have the number of troops that are amassing, you know, at the border there. And then there's also the situation with water being turned back on. There's a lot to hit. So let's just dive into it. So the situation with water in Gaza, it's a way for them to move, because they had the reports of water being turned on, and it's a way for I think them to move everyone from north to south, and because the north is where the majority, where most of the action, for the lack of a better way to put it, is happening. The number of people, because there's been all kinds of reports. You can't trust a lot of the stuff, I think, that comes especially from Gazan media, clearly, because it's a lot of it's propaganda. But there are reports that Hamas are not letting a significant number leave the north to go into the south. And don't forget what we had discussed last week with the situation with Hamas and water pipes for rockets and sewage pipes for rockets and all of this other stuff. And the situation with the population in northern Gaza, as there have been strikes that have gone underway, Hamas so far hasn't shown any inclination to give up any kind of the hostages, which this would be over if they just simply decided to give up the hostages, then this would be over. There was an offer from Iran to try to broker some sort of deal, to try to broker a deal that would get the hostages, that would have the hostages released, and then they could have a ceasefire on the strikes, etc. I think it's interesting that Tehran wants to broker some sort of agreement, because to me, that's them blinking at this point, because Israel means business. But I still don't think at this point, I mean, you have to look at this situation, any kind of geopolitical theater, you have to look at it very, very clinically. You can't be emotional. This is where people who get emotional get people killed and get more people killed. And we're going to dive into some of this as well with the proportionality, etc. But you have this, the carrier strike groups. You have the buildup. Israel means business. Everybody said it. They mean business, and this has gone on long enough. So their foreign minister said that, well, Hamas, if Israel does cease its airstrikes in Gaza, then they will start releasing hostages. They're ready. Well, they said they're ready to release hostages, not that they would release hostages. And I think that language is important here. They said that the terror group said that they're ready to take necessary measures to do so. And the way that they put it is that, well, they're held, you know, by these resistant groups. The way that they're putting it is a way to absolve themselves of any responsibility of kicking all of this off. And there is, it does seem like there is a shift here. It does. I mean, it does seem like they maybe perhaps blinked. We'll see. But Iran getting involved and suggesting that they would broker this agreement, I don't know. I mean, I also think that it means that they realize these airstrikes are having serious impact. And I don't think that this is so much about them being concerned about civilian loss of life, because there is no way that you're going to be able to convince me at all whatsoever that Hamas in any way cares about civilian lives. They don't care about civilian lives. Let's be frank about this. They don't care, because if they would, then they wouldn't be having their headquarters in a hospital, and they wouldn't be using schools and everything else to store ammunition, munitions, the whole nine yards. They wouldn't have started this in the first place. Let's just go ahead and say that. They wouldn't have started this in the first place if they cared about loss of life, which brings me to the argument over proportionality. I don't know if you heard this audio. This was from, so you know Sadiq Khan, he's the London mayor. And he's a very big leftist. And very big leftist. We're not a fan of him here at the program. But Sadiq Khan was talking about, I think this was to the BBC, and he gave this interview wherein he was discussing the proportionality that Israel should have in response to all of this. And it does not, I don't even know how that's a conversation that anyone could have. I believe we have this audio, if we could go ahead and kick this off.
But if we were to decide that we should have this fetish about proportionality, then that would mean that in retaliation for what Hamas did in Israel on Saturday, Israel should try to locate a music festival in Gaza, for instance, and good luck with that, should try to find a music festival in Gaza and rape precisely the number of women.
No, this is not the correct audio, so we will not be playing this. This is not Sadiq Khan. So let's go ahead. This is not the audio. I will find it and I'll get that ready for you. That's not the London mayor on the proportional response. Moving on, we have a couple of other things. I'll look that up for you, because that was not Sadiq Khan. That was not the correct audio, and that's not labeled correctly. So this proportionality with all of this, I think if people were going to be proportional with it, then you would have seen Israel, I think, probably copied the way that Hamas was acting. They would be targeting music festivals, etc. So we'll dive into all of that. Let's switch gears here. We have some of the latest with the House as well. They still do not have a House Speaker at all. There is no House Speaker. There is no House Speaker yet. Jim Jordan, it looks like, I really don't care about this topic. Can I just be honest with you? I don't care about the House Speaker. I think it's stupid that they're wasting time with us right now in the first place. This should have been a done deal. They were going to have Steve Scalise. Steve Scalise couldn't get the votes. Jim Jordan probably isn't going to get the votes either. You have Extreme Hakeem Jeffries out there who's arguing for some sort of cooperative leadership of the House, and that's not going to happen. So in the meantime, nothing is going to get done in the House. And while Democrats blow this up and while media blows this up, don't forget that you still have a Senator Menendez that no one can seem to bring themselves to condemn on record. So it doesn't seem as though I don't know if anything's going to get done this week. They've been in meetings in and out all weekend. And again, it was going to be Scalise. Now it looks like it's Jim Jordan. You have Kevin McCarthy who came out and endorsed Jim Jordan over the weekend. But it looks we still don't have and I don't know that he's going to get it. And I don't think that he particularly wants it. I like Jim Jordan. I think Jim Jordan is a solid conservative. The left dislikes him. And whether you like it or not, we have such a slim majority in the House that it actually does. I hate saying this, but this is the way that politics work. He's going to have to be able to corral Democrats even as well as House Speaker. And I just don't think that that's something that he is going to be able to do. So that's an issue here. That's an issue here. We have a lot still on the way that we're going to get into. We've got headlines to jump into as well. And we're also going to touch on some of the history of this, because the big question is, why aren't the Gaza's Arab neighbors taking in Gazan refugees? That's a very good question. We're going to look back in history at some of what happened when they tried this previously. And we're also going to do a little reminder on the history of elected Hamas leadership. And then, of course, Air DeSantis over the weekend. The left is infuriated because the Florida governor decided to arrange flights to bring Americans who were stranded in Israel back to the United States. And there's a difference between the way that the Biden administration is doing it and the way that the DeSantis, Florida governor's administration, is handling this. We're also going to touch on the problem of anti-Semitism, the college issue, and Vivek Ramaswamy. Oh, yeah, we got a lot to hit. Do you love hiking or camping? Whether it's a short walk through the woods or an overnight stay along the trail, Kel-Tec has the protection you need. For two decades, the Folds and Half Kel-Tec Sub 2000 carbine has been filling the pistol caliber carbine gap with options for several popular magazines, including Glock, Smith & Wesson, and Sig Sauer. The Kel-Tec Sub 2000 is much easier and less to take along. Sights are intuitive, the stock is adjustable, and field stripping is a breeze. Plus, the Sub 2000 can easily be disassembled for cleaning or inspection without extra tools to carry in your pack. From now until March 2024, Kel-Tec is offering a $100 rebate program on any newly purchased Sub 2000 from a licensed dealer. Buy a Kel-Tec Sub 2000, get $100. So if you've been waiting for the right time to buy an American original, consider this your invitation and visit KeltecWeapons.com today. That's KeltecWeapons.com to learn more about the Sub 2000 and $100 rebate program. KeltecWeapons.com.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So the difference between this story and like some of the other stuff that you've seen that's been happening over in Israel is that you're not going to see pro-Israel people rallying in the streets behind this psycho. An older man, stabbed a 71-year-old Joseph Kuzba. Was charged with first-degree murder, attempted first-degree murder, an aggravated battery with a deadly weapon, and two counts of a hate crime in Will County, according to the Plainfield Township, sheriff's office. They said that this guy attacked and stabbed to death a six-year-old boy and targeted him and his mom because apparently of their faith in the Israel-Hamas war. Apparently they are Muslim. And so he attacked them, stabbed the six-year-old boy to death. This is why the death penalty was created. But you're not going to see any conservatives do what they did in New York and have big giant rallies and support this guy and talk about how they need to free this guy and all that other stuff, because we're not monsters. Moving on. Let's see. Rite Aid is apparently going to declare bankruptcy. This is wild. They're filing for bankruptcy because they can't pay hundreds of lawsuits about oversupplied opioids. So they were just like handing out opioids like candy. Is that what I'm to understand? It's what it seems like. They filed for Chapter 11 on Sunday. They were unable to settle all these lawsuits that accused them of oversupply. They have no idea what locations are going to close or how many stores are going to close in total. Interesting, though. Let's see. I don't care about Madonna's tour. I really don't care. And delete. Ice cream and potato chips are just as... I really just don't care. If I wanted to talk about, you know, pillow face McSquatty pants, then I would. I just don't care. Ice cream and potato chips are just as addictive as cocaine or heroin, according to research. Well, I'm going to be a drug dealer then. You ban those things, I promise you what I'm going to do is I'm going to be on the street. I will be selling these things on the street corner, completely in opposition of my government. They said that they're called ultra-processed foods. Also, I think this is stupid. I think it's dumb to compare it. But, you know, they did this. It was only a handful of studies across 36 countries. They said 40% of adults are hooked on ultra-processed foods. You know, you could also have the argument that ultra-processed foods are super cheap. And one of the reasons that people are addicted to them is because they're broke. They're also addicted to being broke poor. How about that? That's also, you know, just maybe that's also probably an issue. Netflix plans to open brick and mortar locations in one of the stupidest business decisions that I think I've ever heard. I have no idea why they want to do this. They said, I mean, they haven't had a DVD service in forever, but apparently now they're looking to open stores offering retail dining and live entertainment. That's stupid. One of the reasons that Netflix is popular is because you don't have to leave your home and you don't actually have to talk with other people. I went to an Oktoberfest over the weekend. You know, I hate going. I mean, I'm literally a hobbit. I will stay in my home. You have to coax me out with like video games and, you know, pizza. And I didn't want to leave. But I did actually go out. I did. I didn't talk to anybody, but I went out. Proud of me? I had a schnitzel. It was delicious. Walgreens pharmacists could stage a nationwide walkout across the U.S. in days, forcing patients to plan their meds in advance. So this is all great. This is all perfect timing. Let's just Leroy Jenkins the hell out of everything in the United States, shall we? We could get Matt Gaetz to lead it. Let's just do that. Sounds fantastic. They're calling it Pharmageddon. It's fears that Walgreens pharmacists could stage nationwide walkouts, forcing people to have to play. I mean, if everybody plans stuff in advance, they're probably going to suffer some shortages, I would have imagined. They've already been some Walgreens pharmacist walkouts, but they said none on a large and organized scale. They said that their people are understaffed and overworked. They probably, because we need more pharmacists, I would imagine. But, you know, we're too busy teaching people that you can chop off your schlong and be a chick. So, you know, who cares about things like math or taxes or, you know, being a pharmacist or anything like that? You know what? Just go ahead and identify as being a pharmacist. If people are overstaffed and overworked, then just identify as being a pharmacist and, you know, problem solved. Look at me, solving problems for the world. I feel like I should get an award for this. I really think so. I mentioned this earlier. Kevin McCarthy has endorsed Jim Jordan for Speaker of the House in another continuation of the stupidest narrative unfolding in the United States today. So coming up, the problem with anti-Semitism, colleges, and a nation of idiots. Stick with us.
Same old predictable commentary. Spice up your day with a Dana Show podcast, where dynamic discussions, compelling guests, and Dana's unique perspective await. Download on Apple or wherever you get your podcasts.
Having some technical issues on the program today. Welcome back to the program. Can we play this audio of Sadiq Khan?
Well, I'm not an expert on, you know, international conventions and so forth, but, you know, there's got to be, an understanding that the consequences of a disproportionate reaction from the Israeli government is going to be incredible hardship. We're already seeing it from the pictures and images coming from Gaza. I've spoken to Londoners who've lost family members in Gaza.
Tired of the same old...
I also, by the way, spoke to Londoners who've lost members of their family as a consequence of the Hamas terrorist attack last weekend. And so we're feeling the pain here in London. But, you know, we are worried about the response of the Israeli government being disproportionate, leading to, the sort of suffering that's inexplicable. I think our government has got a really good relationship with the Israeli government. And we should use that to try and remind the Israeli government, the importance of responding proportionally, the importance of allowing water, food, medicine, essential supplies to reach the people of Gaza. Explain to the Israeli government, the unreasonableness of expecting 1.1 million people, the population size of Birmingham, to within 12 hours leave, their homes, and go to the south. Well, by the way, speaking to people here, there's nowhere for them to go to in the south, and so I'm unclear, what is going to happen in the coming days as well. And I think, you know, our government has got a special relationship with.
I'm trying to figure out the issue of proportionality here, and that is the London mayor Sadiq Khan, who is very, very worried about the issue of the proportionality in terms of Israel's response to Hamas. And this has been the big conversation all weekend that I have seen all over social media, that I've seen on Facebook, YouTube. Well, you've seen it on cable news. You saw it here with London's mayor. And the nonstop demand by Israel that this is, or nonstop demand by the press that, well, Israel needs to make sure that whatever they're doing is proportional. They need to make sure that they are restrained in their response. Where was this concern? And not just in the attack that you saw with from Hamas to Israel, but where was this concern as it related to all of the previous attacks, by the way, I would add, from Hamas towards Israel? And I want to look at some of this stuff here because, I mean, you still have people, you have people that are being held hostage. You have people that are being held hostage. Families have had to put up flyers that have been taken down in other countries. I mean, this is kind of crazy. And there's never been any kind of, there's not been a demand of proportionality that Sadiq Khan has made of Hamas. He hasn't even asked for them to release hostages. And not just him, but all of these people on the left that are talking about, oh, their proportional response, proportional response, proportional response. Well, why didn't you lead with demanding that they release the hostages? You realize that we wouldn't even be dealing with this issue had that been done previously. It's pretty amazing. The number of hostages and the number of hostages that are Americans, the number of hostages that are kids, and we know that there are kids. There was video released over the weekend showing Hamas with all of these kids that they kidnapped from this or that kibbutz, and they have them in Gaza. I haven't seen any of the squad demand for those hostages to be released against Sadiq Khan, who's talking about proportionality. You don't see the IDF going and kidnapping Gazan children. They're not killing their parents and kidnapping the children. They're not burning kids alive. This whole thing is weird. I think this is so bizarre to me. And then you have all of the leftist groups in the United States that have come together and said, oh, well, you know, they need to stop this attack on Hamas. Like Israel was sitting around and just decided that they were going to respond, or they were going to be the aggressor in this situation. Every time there's been a ceasefire, again, Hamas has broken it. Hamas had multiple opportunities the Gazans have had multiple opportunities to adopt a two-state solution, and they have refused every single time. The Hamas charter reads, I mean, they quote Hitler for crying out loud. They quote Nazi talking points. It's bizarre. And to see this focus is bizarre to me. But like I said, I saw it all through the weekend. And there is, you know, when talking about proportionality, I mean... yeah, sure. There's proportionality. If you wanted to have that discussion and have a conversation about what is the best way to respond, what is the proportional response here? Well, you could play. He's a writer that he was on BBC Audio Soundbite 7. Play just a little bit of this.
Is that a reasonable, proportionate, and moral response by Israel?
There is some deep perversion in Britain whenever Israel is involved in a conflict, and it is the word you just used, proportion, proportionate, proportionality. Only Britain is really obsessed with this. I've heard it for the last few days incessantly. Proportionality in conflict rarely exists. But if we were to decide that we should have this fetish about proportionality, then that would mean that in retaliation for what Hamas did in Israel on Saturday, Israel should try to locate a music festival in Gaza, for instance, and good luck with that, should try to find a music festival in Gaza and rape precisely the number of women that Hamas raped on Saturday, kill precisely the number of young people that Hamas killed on Saturday.
Now, target a music festival. I thought that was a great point that he made. Anybody who's not calling for Hamas to completely and unconditionally surrender is not serious about ending this war. whether it's the United Nations. I mean, you realize that Hamas has been blocking their roads to stop civilians from fleeing. These photos have emerged, taken by Gazans even. They're trying to do, one, Israel is trying to minimize loss of life with civilians. But Gaza needs a lot of civilians to lose their lives so that they can go on and pretend to be the victims, even though they are the aggressors. I mean, you had leaflets that were dropped instructing everyone to leave. They gave them, I mean, good grief, everybody's known this was coming for days. And Hamas blocks people. And then you have people who say that they don't want to leave anyway. I mean, there were people who were protesting, saying that they weren't going to allow Israel to make them leave. They weren't going to be humiliated. And I would think, well, your humiliation began when you elected Hamas into power. I mean, you humiliated yourself, the people who were protesting in the streets about how they weren't going to be humiliated by Israel and be forced to leave. You humiliated yourself by electing Hamas. Can you imagine? Can you imagine World War II? Well, we can't have the Allies act because we're too afraid. We don't want to be cowed by Germany or Japan about civilian casualties. So we're going to allow for a greater number of civilian casualties because of we're going to buy into this we're going to allow the media to dictate response. In some respects, I can't even imagine. It's very similar. I can't imagine how that would have gone. If the Allied powers would have responded similarly. But that's been Hamas's MO. I mean, they use human shields. They have their headquarters in a hospital. Their armory literally was in both a school and underground in a mosque. We talked last week about how when their sewage needed improvements with infrastructure, they, instead of actually using the funds that were sent to them to improve their sewage infrastructure, they instead created literal bombs with sewage pipes. They did the same thing with their water system. Do you know their water system? I think going back to 2017, they've had issues. I mean, they've had some serious issues with their water system. But they, every opportunity that they have to improve their infrastructure, they refuse to do it. They refused to. And they were elected. That's the other thing that we have to talk about, and it's truthful to talk about this. They were elected. And that's not wrong to say this. It's not incorrect to say this. It's observing history. You know, they don't even have any civilian bomb shelters in Gaza. None. They've never built any. They never built a single one. Just like they don't build schools, just like they don't build anything. They haven't built any of these. They turned the water back on in Gaza, speaking of the water. And a lot of some Hamas propagandists, including those in the AP, we're saying that, well, that's because Israel realized how bad it was. Actually, Israel turned the water back on in the southern part of Gaza so that people in the northern part of Gaza, where Hamas was concentrated, would leave. But then Hamas started blocking roads, preventing civilians from leaving. Now, it was reported, I'm reading this Axios story, where they were saying that there was some pressure from the Biden administration, and that's why they turned it on. I don't think that that had anything to do with it. I think that they were trying to literally empty northern Gaza out of civilians, and they were thinking of whatever they could do to do that, and turning the water back on in southern Gaza, that's the way to do it. And it's true that Hamas was absolutely blocking people from evacuating. You know, there are reporters that are even embedded in Gaza, and they were reporting on this. They have Hamas who they need these human shields. That's what Hamas does. And when Hamas blocks people from fleeing, and then if there is loss of civilian life due to an Israeli strike, then Hamas, oh, Israel's attacking innocent bystanders. When it's Hamas that made them innocent bystanders in this, it's Hamas that made them victims. Back in 2017, there's this report from Amnesty International. This is wild. They found in this report they were looking at water in Gaza. And what they discovered was that about anywhere from 90 to 95% of it was not fit for human consumption. Remember how I told you that their sewage plants were just dumping stuff right into the Mediterranean? Because ever since Hamas was elected into power, Hamas has not spent a single dime on Gazan infrastructure. Hamas has not spent a single dime on medicine. Hamas has not spent a single dime on hospitals, on schools, on anything. They get aid. Israel sends them aid annually. They get aid from other, the Biden administration was sending them tons of aid. Do you know what they were spending their money on? And by the way, the Palestinian Authority, that dude who was speaking from the West Bank saying that Hamas, talking about something, how they don't support what Hamas is doing. The Palestinian Authority was supporting Hamas, for crying out loud. They had money earmarked for their martyrs fund. So that's a lie. You know, there were a lot of households that didn't even have, they had running water, but then they didn't have running water anymore. And you want to know why? Because Hamas would dig into the ground looking for pipes to take apart to use as bombs after they sent all the ones that had been given to them to replace their old corroding pipes and update their infrastructure. They used all those for bombs. So they had decided to dig up existing pipes, take those apart, and cause entire areas to go without water so that they could send that, make those into bombs and send them over. But everyone's like, oh, but it's Israel that's responsible for all of this. And like I said, I say Gaza because that's correct. I don't say Palestine and I don't say Palestinian because it's not an ethnicity. It's not supported by 2,000 years of antiquity, not mentioned in the Bible, not mentioned in the Quran. In fact, it was a name given spitefully by Hadrian to the enemies of the Jewish people there after you had Israel and Judea split and after the quelling of the Second Judean Uprising, when Hadrian went in and spitefully renamed the Jewish people in that land there after their enemies, Syria, Palestina, after the Philistines, who were Greek, by the way, as seafaring people that were already gone 600 years before Arabs showed up in that part of the world. But I digress. So I like to go with fact, because just as I believe that you can't chop off your schlong and call yourself a chick, so too do I believe that you can't conjure a country into existence by sheer force of will or propaganda. So where's the proportionality for Hamas? Where's the proportionality for that? Why is everyone in the press so damn terrified to talk about how they were elected? You know why they're afraid to talk about that Hamas was elected? Because they're trying to toe a line about people in Gaza, that there are innocent people in Gaza. And, you know, you need to recognize that, as though somehow discussing how Hamas was elected is somehow also the forfeiture of innocence in Gaza. That makes no sense to me. They're trying to cow you into abolishing any responsibility for Hamas, even incrementally, by forcing you to adopt this language or to not recognize certain things. And I absolutely, hell's bells, will not do it. We have a lot more on the way. For 10 years, Patriot Mobile has been America's only Christian conservative wireless provider. And when I say only, trust me, they're the only one. Glenn and the team have been great supporters of the show, which is why I'm proud to partner with them. Patriot Mobile offers dependable nationwide coverage, giving you the ability to access all three major networks, which means you're getting the same coverage you've been accustomed to without funding the left. And when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're sending the message that you support free speech and religious freedom, the sanctity of life, the Second Amendment, military veterans, and first responders. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team makes switching easy. Keep your number, keep your phone, or upgrade. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Just visit patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT and get free activation when you use offer code Dana. Join me and make the switch today. That's patriotmobile.com/Dana or call 878-PATRIOT.
Looking for the drive-through version of The Dana Show? Check out the best highlights from every show and Dana's Absurd Truth podcast, posted daily from The Dana Show.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of the United States.
Don't hear no. I eat no for breakfast. Don't hear no. Always believe in what can be, unburdened by what has been.
Oh my gosh. Guys, she didn't. It was literally over the weekend. too. So it's not, I don't even know, man. Don't even know. That's the vice president of the United States.
How many times, if you were to guess, has she used that line? How many times?
I don't know, but I saw, when I first saw that online over the weekend, I thought, no, she didn't. I thought someone was joking. I thought it was like a meme or something. I just didn't really pay attention to it. And then, no, it's actually, she did that. That's true. So, yeah, fun stuff indeed. Can't. She didn't know what to say. That's what her brain defaults to when she shorts out. She has no idea what she's going to say. That's what she defaults to. We have more in store as we barrel towards the top of our second hour. The problem with anti-Semitism on college campuses and a nation of idiots. We got a lot. Don't miss.
We don't have a clear definition of success from the Israeli prime minister either. I asked the national security advisor, and he just said,
well,
generally,
I actually think we do.
The Jewish state.
I think we do, with all respect. I mean, I think he has said that it is the total and complete defeat of Hamas, where they're no longer existing as a functioning entity. I think that is achievable. I think Israel can do that, and I think they have every right, and indeed, I think they have the duty to do that.
I think that's correct. That's Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. So he was on, what was it, Face the Nation, MSNBC. And we're going to set something up here because we got to have this refugee discussion. There's been a division in the right, and well, with the candidates at least, on these Gazan, I guess you could, refugees is what the way that their media is referencing them as. Welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour, Dana Lash here with you. The Florida governor, in addition to that, they also did this thing called Air DeSantis. And I thought this was interesting because the way that I have seen this handled, at least at the federal level, was very interesting. So first off, welcome back to the program. Top of the second hour, Dana Lash with you. You can listen coast to coast. Find us Facebook, YouTube, Channel 347, DirecTV. This, the federal government has been, they've been doing what they, you know, these repatriation flights. But I was reading some of the information about how that was done over the weekend. And the way that they do it is apparently you have to sign a promissory note basically saying that, you know, you could get billed for it. That's true. So I was looking at the reporting on this too. It's at travel.state.gov. And the way that, I mean, this is, so they said departure assistance to U.S. citizens. This is from information for U.S. citizens about a U.S. government assisted evacuation. So this has to deal with getting people out of, like, you know, war zones, basically. And so the way that it reads is that individuals evacuated on a U.S. government coordinated transport, charter military flights, you have to sign an evacuee manifest and promissory note prior to departure. It says that the U.S. law requires that departure assistance to private U.S. citizens or third world nationals be provided on a reimbursable basis to the maximum extent practicable, and that evacuees, by taking a U.S. government coordinated transport, evacuees are obligated to pay the cost of their transportation. The amount billed is based on the cost of a full fare economy flight, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm putting that because that's important to note. And that the way that it's incredibly important to note, because the State Department would try to pick, people were apparently stranded in Cyprus, as I understood. They were stranded in a couple of, after they were able to get out, after they got out of Israel, the government, the State Department apparently had like boats to take people to Cyprus and try to get them to Europe. But every single one of them, according to the way that the media reported it, they had to sign these notes, et cetera, et cetera. There's just a very different approach in how the Biden administration was handling evac it's still bad. I don't think they learned a hell of a lot from Afghanistan. And then the way that the Florida governor handled all of this. They made sure they coordinated these flights. People were so mad about this. And I'm trying to figure out why they were mad. Like Adam Kinzinger was mad about this. Everybody was mad about this. So he helped organize these flights to fly stranded Floridians out of Israel. That was his whole plan to do it. And the internet came up with memes and they were calling it Air DeSantis. They said that he issued an executive order to send planes to Israel to rescue about, there were 20,000 Americans who were apparently stranded there. 1,000 of them were Floridians, according to the administration. And the way that they said they were going to handle it, if they were going to charge people for the flights like the feds would, they said no. And I was reading the executive order that he put out. And saying that Floridians stranded in Israel, they will be evac'd. They said that continuing to present date, et cetera, et cetera. The way that he approached this is so different. When you look at the quote unquote federal assistance, you have to pay. And then once then you get taken to Cyprus, to Greece or Germany, and then you stay there. The flights that DeSantis was arranging apparently bring you right back to Florida. And I was looking at this from the State Department. It was an email from the State Department, actually, that, I'm going to drop this in Slack. They said that they were writing, blah, 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 blah. You cannot choose your destination. They assign you to the next available flight or ship. And then you're kind of on your own after they get you to that point. So if they got you to one of those three areas, then you were pretty much like on your own after that. Big difference between the way that DeSantis was doing it, isn't there? Why is it so much easier for him to do this? I mean, so much easier. So see, that's the problem. When you have, because they have a major surplus in Florida. A major surplus. When you properly manage your state's finances, you don't have to charge people to evacuate them from a war zone. Of course, you can't say that about Biden. I mean, they literally are able to provide that sort of help. They literally can do that. But meanwhile, the federal government's like, yeah, well, we'll get around to maybe sending a plane out, but you got to pay for your seat. Here, sign this note. That's how it has to work. You have to pay for your seat. That's how it works. Pretty amazing. But that's, again, what happens when you have a state where you've made very smart financial decisions and you run a crazy surplus. Can you imagine? I would love to run a budget surplus in the United States. Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine running a national surplus? Think of all the opportunities for activities. Think of all the ways you can be left alone. It's amazing.
Texas runs a surplus.
I think in spite of the weak Republican leadership, they run a surplus. Yeah. Now, here's the thing. They were calling it DeSantis Airlines, and some in the media were being a little... It almost seems like they were upset about this. So they had the first air flights of 300 Americans evacuated. DeSantis met them at the airport, apparently. So they already got here. If they said if you were stranded in Athens, we might be able to assist you. Go to floridadisaster.org/Israel, et cetera, et cetera. They extended the offer because the Biden administration kept dragging their feet. So you already had a number of Floridians who were trapped in Israel that were able to get home. Literally, Ron DeSantis got them home. Everybody else is tweeting stuff, and lawmakers in D.C. are dithering, but DeSantis he brought them home. Just saying, that's unbelievable. State Department is the worst, the absolute worst. And then they have to pay for it. Now here's the other thing that's different. So you had this back and forth with this was on, let me pull this up, Face the Nation, I believe, correct? Or was it on MSNBC? Yes, CBS, Face the Nation. Sorry, I kept saying MSNBC. I don't watch these shows, so I can't sit here. If you quizzed me on what network Face the Nation was on, I don't watch this garbage, so I don't tell you. I don't know. So he was on Face the Nation, and he made these remarks in Iowa where they were trying to say that he had a hardline approach when it came to dealing with the evacuees from Gaza. He had said, quote, "They teach kids to hate Jews. The textbooks do not even have Israel on the map. They prepare very young kids to commit terrorist attacks. I think it's a toxic culture." And he said that he was against having, he goes, "Not all of them are Hamas, but they are anti-Semitic." He says, "None of them believe in Israel's right to exist. The Arab state should be taking them. If you have refugees, you don't fly people in and take them to the United States of America." And that's true. So he was, they were trying to say that his remarks were too, that they were too hard, they were too hardlined, et cetera, et cetera. And the remarks that he made, they set him up to contrast with Nikki Haley. So they, after him, they had Nikki Haley on, and they asked Nikki Haley about DeSantis's remarks. And she was saying, when she was asked about the Gazan evacuees, she was trying to walk a more middle line with it. She said that she was contrasting and said that was talking about how the United States was very good at telling terrorists from civilians and trying to walk this like middle line between this, which was weird to me when I was reading when I was looking at the readout of her interview. She said that there are so many of these people who want to be free from this terrorist rule, she said, end quote. Okay, well, I have to stop there because, again, they took the majority of votes in their elections. Plural. Notice how I said plural. Elections. They took the majority of the vote. Their charter is very, very, the Hamas charter, very anti-Israel. They enjoy, according to numerous surveys, including the Pew Research Survey, there's also quote-unquote Palestinian surveys where the majority of people in Gaza actually support the way that Hamas is running. Hamas beat Fatah. They're all parts of the same weird coin for Palestinian Authority, but Hamas beat Fatah in their elections. Fatah had been the ruling power in Gaza for a very long time because you have Gaza and you have West Bank, and then Hamas ended up taking control over in Gaza. And they enjoy a super high approval rating. I think the last approval rating that was measured, and this was Pew, it was like 63% approval rating. So it's very difficult for the people who are observing this to reconcile stuff like this. What Haley says, there are people who want to be free from terrorist rule, and then look at the previous elections that have been held and see that Hamas was overwhelmingly elected, to see that Hamas enjoys overwhelming approval. And the loudest activists that are out there can't seem to bring themselves to at all whatsoever criticize Hamas. They just attack Israel. And that's and Hamas, which is the governing authority for Gaza, again, elected, they have it in their charter that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. They have rejected any two-state solution. So what DeSantis is saying is correct. What Haley just said here is incorrect. And spare me the whole, well, she was a UN ambassador, so she knows more about this. I reject this stuff because I think it's an anti-American sentiment to argue that you have to be in government in order to be educated in this country. In fact, I think it's being in government is antithetical to being educated, but that's a whole other argument. Every average American, every average everyday American that has the will and the curiosity and the ability to read up on what is happening, not just in their country and around the world, has every bit of a right, authority, and the potential for expertise as any one of these government stooges. So spare me this BS, anti-American, red coat line of thinking, because that sort of ideology is the type that we shirked off in a violent rejection back in 1776. So I just reject all of that elitist garbage. That's a very big difference in the way that they responded here. And the way that Haley was saying that she's making clear that she is not against Gazan evacuees and settling people here. And I have a major problem with that because Lebanon had a major problem with that. Egypt has had a major problem with that. And we're going to talk more about that here coming up and why it hasn't worked before.
And now, all of the news you would probably miss. It's time for Dana's Quick Five.
So one of the victims of Epstein who testified against Ghislaine Maxwell, she has passed away and her family wants answers. Her name is Carolyn Adriano. She was a victim of Jeffrey Epstein. Her testimony was apparently crucial to putting away Ghislaine Maxwell. She's passed away. There was no obituary or funeral service. It was in West Palm Beach. So they said that the investigation concluded that it was an accidental overdose, but her family is... They're taking issue with that and rejecting that argument because they said that she and her husband literally just purchased property weeks before, that she was ecstatic over, you know, starting that new phase of her life. And they said that she had been free of drugs and alcohol. She had been sober, etc. And they want cops to investigate further. I just think that's all very, very, very convenient that it happened like that. You know, just very interesting. I just, you know, have to say, you know. Oh, goodness. I love it. Speaking of government, I mean, or not, you know, depends on how you look at that story. The Philly, they had a misspellage on their signage at a new train station. I'm trying to say this train station's name correctly. Conshohocken. Conshohocken? That's right. If I don't get it right, everybody in Philly's going to message me. They're opening this new station. They have new signage that arrived for the building, but apparently they literally misspelled Philadelphia on the sign. So their transportation said, stop telling us that this is misspelled. We get it. It's misspelled. It's S-E-P-T-A. They said, we get it. If it's misspelled, we understand. So you know how Philadelphia is spelled, correct? It's, you know, Phil. Philadelphia. This is how they spelled it on the sign. Philadelphia. I don't even know how to say that. Philadelphia. Philadelphia. How do they? They haven't replaced it yet. People might think they're going somewhere different. Stay with us.
Ready to grow your intellectual Rolodex? Download the Dana Show podcast and join the ranks of those who refuse to settle for the same old boring content on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Would you support Israeli occupation of Gaza at this point?
I think it'd be a big mistake. Look, what happened in Gaza, in my view, is Hamas and the extreme elements of Hamas don't represent all the Palestinian people. And I think that it would be a mistake to for Israel to occupy Gaza again. But to going in and taking out the extremists, the Hezbollah is up north, golly, but Hamas down south is...
Spit the damn sentence out. I could spend the rest of my show waiting for President Daddy Showers here to form a single sentence. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here. We don't have that kind of time. I have so much information. We don't have that kind of time to sit here and wait for this dude to... I mean, he sounds like an old person from SpongeBob. Stop. Dana Lash with you. You're besieged upon curmudgeon. The question that he was asked here was, or the issue that he was talking about, was the quote-unquote Israeli occupation of Gaza. As I told you before, I'm going to continue talking about this, and we're going to segue from this into some of the stuff that we've seen from colleges, and even some of the stuff I've seen on the right, by the way. I reject that. It's a it begs the question. And I don't mean the inappropriate use of that, the name of that logical fallacy, which is to, it's often used as a substitute for posing a question, which is the incorrect way to use it. Begging the question is assuming that a premise is true, thus the conclusion is also true. So he's begging the question because he's talking about Israeli occupation of Gaza, assuming that Gaza wasn't just bequeathed to people by Israel. They left everything there, including the existing infrastructure at the time. They unilaterally pulled up roots and receded, leaving it to Gazans, leaving it to, I guess, the people who are under the quote-unquote Palestinian Authority, even though I reject the name of that as it's not an ethnicity and it's a new creation that was promoted by Yasser Arafat, who himself was a monster. So he's assuming he's begging the question because he's assuming that it's not Israel's in the first place. Every opportunity for a two-state solution has been rejected. So as of such, I see no problem if Israel wants to claim that strip back. And hell, I think they should. Every opportunity has been rejected for a two-state solution. Literally every single time. Without exception. That is no exaggeration. That is the truth of it. Every time. And you know, when people left Gaza and they decided to go and live in Israel, Israel just had no issue absorbing people. Speaking of refugees, there's a reason why no other Arab nation is taking any dislocated individuals from Gaza. I don't know if you've seen the checkpoint at Rafah there between Egypt and Gaza, but Egypt has their border. There's all kinds of photos from journalists that are right there taking photos current time, showing the Egyptian military in full with full auto, all kitted out at the border. Everything's locked and shut down. There's a reason why. Jordan is not accepting any evacuees from Gaza. Egypt isn't either. They're going back and forth. Well, maybe perhaps they have a good relationship with Israel right now. Saudi Arabia not accepting. Qatar, they only take Hamas, the leader of Hamas. Do you know that guy? He's like a multimillionaire. His kids are all set up. He's got like a million kids. He lives in absolute luxury in Qatar. The leader of Hamas doesn't even live in Gaza. So he turns it into a hellhole and then acts like he's a man of the people. And this fat cat is living it up in Qatar. It's insane. But there's a reason why no other Arab nations are accepting evacuees from Gaza. So are they all racist? Is the government of Saudi Arabia racist? Are Egyptians, are they racist? Are Jordanians racist? Are the Qatari racist? Because they're not accepting any evacuees from Gaza. Are they heartless and racist? Or is that just... are those just nicknames that are reserved for the United States to use as some sort of emotional control tool to try to cow the United States into cleaning up an area that it really has no obligation to clean up or do anything with because it's not our issue? Israel can handle it. The United States should absolutely not accept any evacuees from Gaza under no circumstances. End of. And I think that the Florida governor and others have made some very good points about this. The mindset, the way we talk about critical race theory, which is a absolute Marxist ideology. I've been talking about this since 2012. Critical race theory, which supplants political ideology for the economic warfare. If we think we have it bad here with school books, wait until you look at some of the school books in Gaza. I mean, it's not an exaggeration, some of the stuff that they teach there that you've heard about. That's literally not an exaggeration. It is the government has been grooming youth from I don't know how long, that Israel doesn't have a right to exist, that you are to make war. Families receive a martyr stipend for suicide bombing, etc. That's literally money. I mean, our taxpayer dollars went to that. The leader of Hamas, actually, even the leader of the Palestinian Authority, who I think also lives in Qatar. I don't know why nobody decides that they don't want to live in the hellscapes that they create, but okay. They all have given tons of money to that martyrs fund that is there. And some of these other nations, you know, they sit here and who was it that I heard? The leader of the opposition for the Labour Party. Was it the Labour Party in UK? It was the socialist, one of the socialist government members in Spain that came out and was blasting Israel and occupation and telling everybody that they needed to take Gazan evacuees. You take Gazan evacuees then, Spain. You go ahead. Again, there's a reason why all of these other countries are not accepting refugees. And the reason they're not accepting refugees, and I will give Haley this one part where she was saying that it's difficult to vet, that you can't vet people. You cannot vet people. Here's the thing. Why isn't it widely known where hostages are in Gaza? Or the fact that there isn't an uprising over Hamas literally putting their headquarters in a hospital so that no one will do anything to their headquarters because they're using the hospital as a shield. Where are the riots in the streets over that? It is not to say that people are very much aware and have voted for the brutal representation that they have is not the same thing as saying that people deserve to die. But there is the reality of this geopolitical conversation in which emotion is not part of it. War is brutal. And all the people that are talking about feelings and kittens and sunshine, you have no spot at the table for discussing the issue of war. This is why war is a last resort. It's why war is to be avoided. War is not something that you rush headfirst into. It is something that you are pulled begrudgingly into because you realize the great cost that you are about to incur, not just in terms of finances, but in terms of spirit and in terms of human resource. War is horrific. It is the last resort. And I dare say it is the last resort for Israel here. Because how many decades have we seen this coming from Gaza? We have grown up with this. My gosh, I remember when I was in junior high and they had a video that Yoko Ono did and it was on MTV and they were redoing the Give Peace a Chance song. And they had recorded all of these different celebrities that were singing their part with a white background and they put it all together and they made it a big video on MTV and it was like a number one for a little bit. And it was all about everybody giving. All we're saying is give peace a chance. And it was just about peace because you had terrorists in the Middle East that wouldn't stop being terrorists. And yet somehow everyone else has some sort of responsibility to shirk off terrorism that only one people are participating in and have participated in since the beginning of this. Now, there's a reason why none of these other countries are taking refugees. There's a reason why. No one wants to say it because everybody's terrified of getting canceled. But yet, no one who is talking about death to an entire people and not just disagreement with government, because there is a difference. There's a difference in disagreement with Israeli government and a difference in believing that whether or not Israel has the right to exist. And that's what we're talking about. The situation with all the colleges. So much anti-Semitism. What other colleges were rioting this weekend? Oh, I'm sorry, protesting this weekend. There's like a list. I have this big list. Do I even want to get into it? There's this big list. A nation of absolute idiots. The college problem. This is something else. The New York Bar is now planning an event. They had a really disgusting flyer. You saw some of these other flyers that were used at Columbia, George Washington University, UC San Diego. Oh my gosh. And then you have, I mean, there's a ton, but make sure you watch the parents at the school board meetings. And then you have people like Vivek Ramaswamy who said, he came out and said that he tweeted this. The Harvard student groups who co-signed, and of course he writes this too long, didn't read, big ass paragraph. The people who co-signed the anti-Israel letter are simple fools, but it's not productive for companies to blacklist kids for being members of student. Can we just stop there? These aren't kids. Can we stop this for a second? I really need the people who want to pretend to be on the right to be consistent with identifying kids. You either believe that people who are old enough to drink and sign contracts are babies, i.e. Hunter Biden's, Joe Biden's 50-something-year-old baby, or you believe that they are children. Pick one. Be consistent with it. And let's also be very real about what this is. This isn't just a bunch of stupid progressives. And being that I was raised in an entirely solely Tupperware fresh Democrat family, and I never met a single Republican until I went to college, so I get it. But to say that these are just simply kids that are protesting and making dumb political statements is that's a whitewashing of what this is. These are people who are literally calling for the eradication of an entire nation of people. These are people who are rallying to the defense of a terrorist group that represents an entire area over in the Middle East, in the Levant. They are defending and cheering this terrorist group after they burned children alive, shot kids in the head, after they raped women, after they got on motorized paragliders and decided to descend on a music festival where they gunned down 200 some odd innocent people. There's a great big difference in just advocating for progressive ideology and then advocating for this stuff. So don't whitewash it. Don't do everyone the insult of trying to lessen the barbarity of what these people are actually doing. And guess what? When you FA, you will FO. When you protest in favor of that kind of stuff, then there's a business out there that has every right, because we do believe in that, right? Or are you going to be bake the cake next to Vivek? They have every right to say, we don't want to hire an absolute terrorist apologist, because that's what these people are doing. This is terrorist apologism. That's what this is. It's very different from what we're talking about with basic college protests. And they're not kids. Stop infantilizing college adults. They're on their own. They are old enough to make decisions about their lives. You either believe in personal responsibility or you don't. And by portraying college students as these infant babies, you're committing the progressive sin and showing progressive stripes of excusing them of accountability and personal responsibility. We have Florida Man on the way. Maybe Florida Man can bring us a little bit of sense. Oh my gosh, we're actually looking for sense from Florida Man.
It's his life mission to make bad decisions. It's time for Florida Man.
I just got to say, I don't know what's happening in the studio right now, because Juan just busted out his first pumpkin spice, we've all been told, of the season. We did a quick wellness check to make sure he wasn't in leggings and Uggs. You know, the Han Solo attire of every chick in the fall. We just did it. He's all right. He's still, yeah, he's still in his kicks and all that. He's there. He's good. All right. So I felt like that, you know, because it is spooky season and it's fall season. And all of the female friends that I follow on social media are very excitedly posting about burning their new fall candles on Instagram. Oh my gosh. So it seems like, you know, this is the good time to get into this headline. Orlando man, this is a headline if ever there was. Orlando man was trying to get his home on Zombie House flipping TV show before allegedly killing his wife, say investigators. Now, I've seen and heard of a lot of these, you know, programs where you flip a house. I did not know, Kane, that there was one specifically about zombies.
I didn't either.
Yeah. Did he kill his wife because she was going to be the zombie on the house? I don't know.
There's like 5 seasons of this.
It's called Zombie House Flipping. I don't know anything about this one. Is it done by zombies? I would like to see how a zombie would decorate a house personally, but he apparently strangled his wife to death 5 years ago. That's no laughing matter. As the trial for David Trons enters its second week, prosecutors say that he repeatedly deceived his late wife, telling her that he had inherited millions of dollars, but he left her on the hook for the expenses. And then, they said their renovation became a money pit. Then they went on the A&E show Zombie House Flipping because they thought that would save them financially. And then he ended up killing her. But he said she slipped and fell. And the water, I guess, strangled her around her neck. You know, that's... Did he not think that that's kind of... I mean, good heavens. So, yeah, he's in a lot of trouble. And a Florida man said he's going to help the devil kill a sheriff's helicopter crew. In DeLand, Florida, one very, very crazy dude who was previously arrested for threatening to shoot down a sheriff's helicopter was again arrested after lurking around the hangar and uttering disturbing statements. 59-year-old Robert Money was charged with 3 counts of aggravated stalking. Yeah, so... they seem more sensible than a lot of the other people we've been talking about in headlines today. We got a lot more on the way. Third hour coming up. Stick with us.
What this all means. Paul Tudor Jones, the famed investor, was on CNBC this week, and he said, "This is the most threatening and challenging geopolitical environment that I've ever seen. At the same time, the U.S. is in its weakest fiscal position since World War II, with debt to GDP at 122%. Can America, can the West afford another war at this time?"
I think the answer is absolutely. America can certainly afford to stand with Israel and to support Israel's military needs. And we also can and must support Ukraine in its struggle against Russia. And look, the American economy is doing extremely well.
Oh, wow. No, it's not. Everybody's broke. I mean, tell that to the people who are whose wages can't keep up with inflation. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lash here with you. Top of this third hour. You can listen coast to coast. You can also catch the simulcast YouTube, Facebook, Channel 347, DirecTV also. And the her remark is it's not about we can afford another war. Israel can definitely handle themselves. And Ukraine wouldn't. This is an ongoing issue because the West decided to get involved and a little bit too much. And I think exasperated the issue further. That's between Ukraine and Russia. And there's a big history there that a lot of people in that region are just unaware of. But this bit about the economy, oh, economy's great. We can, well, they do, as Kane noted, they do make money off of war. So, you know, it's war ink in effect there. I know we've got all of this stuff with the House going on right now. And I'm not going to, I mean, I don't think most of you, and I know this because a lot of you tell me so, you don't really care who's the Speaker of the House because you're a little too concerned with everything else right now. And you correctly gauge it as being a power jockeying contest, and it is. And it's a bunch of egos and a bunch of people who have no idea how to carry out strategy. And it's, I get it, you're incredibly frustrated. So if there's big developments, I'll tell you. Jim Jordan's in the running. Can he get to 217? Who knows? So I'll update you if there's anything new. In the meanwhile, we got a ground offensive. In the meanwhile, we got, like, what all do we have? We got a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff happening. Now, in all of this, the day of jihad, we had jihad day Friday. Yeah, it was jihad day. I put a jihad on you. Remember Team America? It's what everybody, when I heard the Hamas dude saying it's, you know, we need a jihad, I'm like, I put a jihad on you. Jihad day. Man, that day sucked. Because most every other day has like a mattress sale or something. Like, you didn't have none of that for jihad day, right? Yeah, in France, you had a teacher, I think that was, I'm looking at just my headlines here. I think there was a teacher that was stabbed. They had one, a French teacher was stabbed to death in a knife attack at a school. That's horrible. They had like another attempted attack, but not really anything that, you know, in the U.S. Although I will caution you, his little call for day of jihad wasn't just like that Friday. Wasn't just, you know, last Friday. I think it's kind of, don't you think so? It's kind of ongoing. It's what he called for. I was at Oktoberfest over the weekend. I went, when did I go? I went on Saturday. Everybody was back home. Went to Oktoberfest on Saturday. I didn't see anybody getting froggy. Had my schnitzel, you know, with my Jaeger sauce. Had all that. My husband's German. And he wears his hat, his Alpine hat. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he does. He does. Walks around with his stein of a beer I can't pronounce. It's coffee colored, you know, how his beer should be. But, you know, didn't see it. It was a very nice, lovely day. You'd almost forgot that so many people in the world are stupid. He almost forgot. If you didn't talk to anyone, you'd think that nobody was. But almost forgot. I saw this because I was talking about Nation of Idiots earlier. I saw the study that came out. New York Sun actually reported it. And they said that only a slim majority of Americans believe Hamas is deliberately striking Israeli civilians. There's a really... Media does a very good job at being apologists for the wrong people. Do they not?
Yeah.
They do a very good job. A very good job. And I see, have you seen a lot of the, can we have this difficult conversation? What is with this thing on the right? There's like a lot of new people coming up on the right. And I think that when you make a big tent and you are focusing on a coalition as opposed to just one homogenous party, you're going to have problems, right? You're going to have growing pains within the family. But there's one big thing that I've seen over the past week that does kind of floor me. I've seen some people on the right, and there are like new people in commentary who, for whatever reason, they believe this thing about Zionism. And I don't think that they understand what Zionism is. They also think that not being a neocon is the exact same thing as total and 1000%, even in terms of self-defense, isolationism. And they think that populism equals conservatism. Have you seen, you might have seen some of this. Some of my friends got into some skirmishes. I only kind of looked at it just to kind of, keep an eye as to what's happening and what's going on. But I've noticed this. Why are there some people, and I've noticed a lot of them are capital L's. What problem do you got with Jewish people? For real, like, what's the deal? When the hell did this crop up? I think that every side has its, has those people. But I've seen it, especially within some commentary within, you guys know it. And if you haven't seen it, then count your blessings that you haven't seen it. I live and breathe this stuff because A, I enjoy it, and also B, because it's my job. So there's a better chance that I've probably seen more of it than you have. And if that's totally fine, count your blessings, like I said, if you haven't. But I'm just wondering why there seems to be, you've seen some of this, right? It's not just me that is seen, like, from some people that would, if they were asked what their ideological alignment is, they would say, right, correct? Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did this happen? I'm, like, serious. Like, when did this happen? Like, I don't recall deal. I just don't. It's very similar to the left in terms of the identity politics thing. I don't like identity politics stuff. But I've seen these people say, oh, well, you, they're the people who are pushing the proportionality argument. They're the ones who are saying that that Israel is somehow culpable or this or that, and pushing some of this stuff out there. They're like, what's it? That Andrew Tate guy. Right? That's his name. Tate. Andrew Tate. That's what I said. It's his name. You tell me that's not his name?
Yes, it's Tate.
Yeah, Andrew Tate. He, like, that kind of stuff. The guy who, the beta male who ended up bending over for whatever ideology has conquered him now. It's true. That's, it's right. But I, like, when did this come up? Like, who are the people who are popularizing this? I saw, there are a couple of other, I guess, collegiate speakers that have been pushing this. It's one thing to disagree with Israel's government, but it's another thing entirely. I just think that a lot of people need to understand the history of the area and need to understand how Hamas came to be and that they were elected and that I'm just kind of floored. And I think a lot of, like, some of the newer people who are in activism that are coming out there, they just think that aggression equals wit. It's a poor substitute for it. Aggression is not a substitute for wit. Intellect is. making good arguments are. That's a good substitute. That is wit, actually. I would say that's the very definition of it. But I have seen some of this. And I think some of that is when, you're building the coalition and you have people who became new to the right. And I think that there are still some vestiges of that progressive mindset present. And I think that those things reveal themselves with issues like this, with events like this. They reveal themselves, so to speak. And, like, for instance, the surrendering, like, people are, they're also the same people who haven't called for surrender. Or they demand that the U.S. take in evacuees. Do you remember what happened when Kuwait did? Or if you don't remember, you can go back and literally look and you can research and you can see what happened when Egypt took in, the last time they took in any kind of evacuees from Gaza. And this was back, years ago, Kuwait, Lebanon. Do you realize they're still having violence in some of the Lebanon encampments? Kuwait, they saw attacks within Kuwait. They saw attacks against their own people. I mean, there's a reason why, because the evacuees started carrying out terrorist attacks on people within those countries. That's why they stopped taking these people in. This would be over if the hostages were released. It would be over. Now, the couple of things. The White House says that it does extensive work. This is a Free Beacon article that came out. They do extensive work to avoid funding terrorist supporters. The State Department grants, however, give a different picture. They noted that the State Department gave $160,000 to a West Bank university that publicly supports Hamas. The 106 figures, that's just one. This is just one example, mind you. There are a lot of others. This is just one. The university in the West Bank is known as a hotbed of Hamas activity that has praised the Hamas terrorists as martyrs after they carried out their attack on Israel. The State Department, it's the Al-Quds University in the West Bank, it granted them just last year alone 160. And that's overseen by the State Department's Office of what they call, quote unquote, Palestinian Affairs. That office came under fire after this. Remember, they were the ones that were helping to delete tweets because they had called on Israel to refrain from retaliatory attacks after they were attacked by Hamas. Remember that it was that office, the State Department's Office of, quote unquote, Palestinian Affairs. And they had tweeted out. And the State Department ended up deleting it and ended up having to send out a clarifying statement that they deleted and then reposted. It was a mess. It was an absolute mess. They said this tweet was not approved and does not represent U.S. policy. But that office, that sub-office there of the State Department, they said, quote, we unequivocally condemn the attack of Hamas terrorists and the loss of life that has incurred. We urge all sides to refrain from violence and retaliatory attacks. Terror and violence solve nothing. So they deleted it. After it had been seen across the world and there was, you know, great outrage, as there should have been. And they gave $100,000 to the Al-Quds Open University. That's another West Bank school that's not affiliated with Al-Quds University. The Al-Quds Open University, that's in both West Bank and Gaza. And they literally would cancel classes to honor, quote unquote, righteous martyrs. And then there was another $119,000 earlier this year to Gaza entities that work with Hamas. We have actually, since 2009, the United States has funded more than, what, $400 million in projects in Gaza alone. $400 million that we've funded. Someone explained to me, just we've given them $400 million, yet they still have no good sewage infrastructure. They dug up their water pipes to use as bombs. They have no, I mean, oh my gosh, because they're taking all of this money. They're really great at building tunnels. Hamas is fantastic at building tunnels. That's where they put everybody's infrastructure in. It's where they put all the money at. In 2013, Brandeis University, they ended their partnership with Al-Quds University because Al-Quds hosted demonstrators in black military gear who literally marched in front of banners that had suicide bombers on them. And the president of that college blamed, quote, vilification campaigns by Jewish extremists, end quote. We are giving money to them. We have a lot more on the way. Stephen Yates is going to be joining us as well. You have heard me talk a lot about how much I love my Kel-Tec P50. It's just so versatile and has become a global choice of protective details and sport shooters like me. Well, have y'all seen the new R50? Like the P50, the R50 carbine is light, well-balanced, and easily manipulated. The side-folding tack driver gives you maximum speed, accuracy, and power downrange. It is great fun out on the range. Looks like a SpaceX blaster, and the 5.7 cartridge comes in several variants, from sporting to hunting to serious personal defense. Now, the R50 comes with two 50-round double-stack mags that lay horizontally along the top, and just like the P50, the R50 offers over 7 inches of rail space up top for a wide range of optic options and even more space on the bottom for accessories. To learn more about the new R50 carbine, visit KeltecWeapons.com. That's K-E-L-T-E-C weapons.com. Keltec, 30 years of innovation to help secure your world. Visit KeltecWeapons.com today. KeltecWeapons.com.
Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, because knowledge is your ultimate superpower.
Okay, so we got some technical issues here, guys. Our headlines section here of the program. Boulder smashed a car after falling from a Renton overpass. This is from KIRO. A driver's recalling the moment when it looked like a boulder dropped from an overpass onto his car, missing him by just a few feet. It happened early Thursday morning as he drove down the boulevard and under the Aberdeen Avenue overpass. That's kind of scary that happened. In addition, there was a man who was caught with over 116 firearms stolen at Applebee's. He was caught with over 116 stolen guns at Applebee's. A Utah woman reported a fake school shooting to divert police from arresting friends, according to, oh wow, this is a KSL. They say criminal charges were filed against a woman who falsely reported a school shooting in an effort to divert officers from arresting her friend. She's a 45-year-old woman. Just crazy. We have Stephen Yates going to be joining us here next. Stay with us. Apologies for the difficulties here, folks, today.
Craving a daily dose of intellectual adrenaline? Look no further than the Dana Show podcast, where curiosity meets courage by following on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Is Iran behind the Gaza war?
I don't want to get into classified information, but to be very blunt with you, there is no clear evidence of that.
At this point, that Iran is behind any of this.
Correct. Now, Iran constantly supports Hamas and Hezbollah. I don't mean that. But in terms of did they have foreknowledge? Did they help plan the attack? There's no evidence of that at this point.
Well, I don't trust anyone. And I, out of all the people that I don't trust, President Daddy Showers right there is at the top of the list of people that I just do not trust. Welcome back to the program. Dana Lashier with you. Listen to Coast, can stream the program. YouTube, Facebook, channel 347, DirecTV. I think our friend Stephen Yates liked that one. That's how it's going to work. You guys know Stephen Yates. You can find him on Twitter at YatesComms. And he, of course, is senior fellow at America First Policy Institute and chair of the China Policy Initiative. I mean, does it matter at this point? I mean, we don't like Iran. We're not getting along with them. We know that there's a relationship there. I think it's just petty squabbling at this point. No one's trying to rush headfirst into fisticuffs with Iran, but I mean, I just think it's silly semantics at this point.
It's also not classified information.
Thank you.
I mean, it's been barfed all over news pages all over the world, and it's been uttered by the ever barf-giving leader of Iran. So I don't know why it's even considered a question. And yeah, it's kind of moot. But, you know, if we had a commander-in-chief, why wouldn't he sort of kick some dirt up on their leg and say, I'm pretty sure they are involved and I'm pretty sure they better back off. But yeah. This kind of talk is what someone does when they're trying to set up some kind of a compromise, some kind of a diplomatic ceasefire. And so this just sounds like a diplomatic crap sandwich coming to your lunch table any day soon.
Yeah, there you go. I saw audio. Well, saw video. The head of the quote unquote Palestinian Authority, which is, I guess, now West Bank leadership. And then the former Hamas guy who called for a jihad day on Friday. Why did they live in Qatar? Why do the Qatari allow them to live there? They don't even live in the hellscapes that they've created. Why do they get to just cash out and live in palaces in Qatar?
Well, there have been deals around the broader Middle East for people to get out of very bad places and people who are very bad to get out. And they're, you know, obviously Qatar has been known to have harbored many folks who were on the lists of ill repute and bank accounts of people on the lists of ill repute for a long time. And so those that were out of Afghanistan, those out of the Iraq war, and lots of other international do-no-gooders. But this particular part of convening Iranians and Hamas leadership is pretty distasteful. And, you know, a lot of talk was coming over the weekend of whatever happened with the post 9/11 mindset. And there's some of it that I don't want to last forever. We shouldn't live in fear forever. And there's some elements of the Patriot Act that I think over time, I think people should find better ways to address some of these challenges. But there is a part of the 9/11, post-9/11 mindset that, you know, when someone is actively supporting evil terrorists, rapists, murderers, terrorists, you then you're either with them or you're against them. You're either with us or against us. I mean, I don't thirst for conflict or war, but they're doing this stuff and I want nothing to do with them.
Yeah, exactly. Talking with our friend Stephen Yates at YatesComs on Twitter. So we were talking over Iran. Their very good friends, China, their China's foreign minister said over the weekend that Israel has just gone too far responding to Hamas. That's according to their official commie news agency. He spoke to the Saudi Arabian foreign minister and the Chinese foreign minister, Wang Yi, said that Israel's actions have extended, Stephen, beyond self-defense, which I don't think anyone asked them.
Yeah, well, I'm fascinated to know what the Communist Party of China's standard is for how many civilian deaths are too many. How many political prisoners are too many? Exactly at what point have you exceeded your self-defense needs by, say, harassing 23 million people in Taiwan or sending a balloon over America? I mean, these new standards that the top commies have are genuinely fascinating to me. But this sort of fence riding, again, I just don't think we should be putting up with people fence riding on is Israel in the right to shellac the places where the people who engaged in this hellish behavior are hiding behind different facilities. I mean, this is within their sovereign territory. And there's one principle that the Chinese leadership supposedly has upheld, and that's kind of the immutability, the unchanging nature of sovereignty. This is within Israel's sovereignty to deal with this. So I don't really quite understand what the Chinese are trying to get at here. I say somewhat mockingly because people don't understand sarcasm on radio sometimes.
Yeah, no, I know. Yeah, you always have to explain for the drive-bys, sadly. how does this, because I just see all of the, I don't want to break, because we used Axis powers back during the World War II era. But I mean, really, it's always you have China, you have Iran, Russia, you kind of have the people who are behind doing everything that they can to try to target the petrodollar. How does it benefit China if how this turns out? Because I just keep thinking that Israel being successful in defending its sovereignty cannot work out well for China, who I think probably does best when there's destabilization in this area.
Well, I guess it depends on whether you really believe the notion that China's leaders are engaged in marathon thinking, whereas we're dealing in short-term thinking. Mm-hmm. And I have a lot of friends who take both sides of that kind of a debate. It's fun academics, but right now, I think Xi Jinping is more of a short-term thinker, not a long-term thinker. Maybe because his days are not unlimited. He's facing a lot of different troubles. And so in the short term, an America depleted and distracted, a world distracted, is an opening for him to move against Taiwan, to push against Japan, to hit his own people from time to time without anyone trying to say or do anything about it, for him to go ahead and run the rump Human Rights Council in the United Nations and have weird disposition or resolutions out there criticizing America and Israel more than, say, China. I think that they're engaged in more short-term calculus. They had a pretty sweet deal with Israel. Israel, in my estimation, had kind of gone further than I would have wanted in having security ties in manufacturing and other kinds of materiel. I don't think China's going to put up with this now that China's full-heartedly siding with kind of the Hamas Palestinian line at this point.
Yeah. Speaking of China, they're celebrating their 10 years of Belt and Road, the way that they can get their tentacles into developing countries, their crappy global infrastructure program. They're meeting Putin this week. They're actually going to, is he meeting him in Beijing? Is he actually going to, is old puffy face McShaky leg going to go over to Beijing?
Yeah, I frankly don't know where they're meeting. And it's kind of crazy that Poot needs some infrastructure support, because I heard he had a lot of black gold that he could be pulling out. And the sanctions have not really done very much to push back on that. And the fact that we have anti-oil, anti-fossil fuels policies and ideologies actually helps those guys. I mean, there was a group of people who seemed to get into high church about anything that was pro-Putin or pro-Russia or whatever else. There's nothing more pro-Putin and pro-Russia than the environmentalist cult. And so that's all this is. It's going to be swapping some beautiful black gold money for some probably no-show jobs for Chinese people to do something that will crumble in 10 years somewhere in the universe.
Yeah, I don't know how they can have a 10-year celebration of Belt and Road without actually doing inventory of how poorly what they do
it's not
ages.
Good. Yeah, you're right. Right. I mean, if this was a belt, they'd be looking for a new hole to put into it to expand, because this is, you know, they've been pouring money and I don't think the returns have been great. And even in South Asian and African and some Latin American countries, there's a lot of buyer's remorse.
Yeah. So let me interrupt and ask you, because there are still countries that are considering joining onto this. How can they consider this when you look at what they've done in other parts of the world? They get these mineral rights, they hang on to them for life, but in exchange they get, made in China level infrastructure.
Yeah, well, I am sure that you're not asking me why a temporary leader of a country would like to get super rich on a project for a time, even if said project is crap city in 5-10 years. If there's a stadium that crumbles and I'm long gone by then, that money still spends really great.
Yeah.
And so, unfortunately, I think that is the reality check that people are getting. Turns out Chinese communists are corrupt. A lot of these countries, sadly, are led by corrupt people. And while they want to kick the United States around, and we are full of problems, we can look left, right, everywhere and find problems. But on our worst days, we're more efficient and more clean and credible than all of these guys.
Yeah, completely. Our good friend Stephen Yates at YatesComs on Twitter. Always appreciate your insight. And hopefully we won't have anything to talk about next week. That'll be boring.
Thanks,
hopefully we won't. Always good to see you. Thank you so much.
You got it. Take care.
We have more to come as we wrap up this third hour of broadcast. And Biden's having to reach into the bottom of the barrel and push gun control again. We're going to hit that before we wrap up this third hour. All right, folks. So you've heard me talk about Hillsdale College giving away free copies of the Constitution and Declaration of Independence to my listeners for Constitution Day on September 17th. They've set an immediate goal to give copies to 1 million Americans who don't have one. And if not you, then maybe a young person that you know. And the response has been tremendous. However, this free offer for my listeners ends soon. So if you haven't already, order your free copy right now at Dana4Hillsdale.com. Because every American should have a copy of the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. And these days, when most schools neglect to teach our kids about our nation's great heritage of liberty, it's more critical than ever to make sure that these documents are readily available to them. So to claim your free copy, visit Dana4Hillsdale.com today, complete a very simple form, and receive your booklet through the mail, and you don't even have to pay for shipping. But as I mentioned, this offer expires soon. So order your copy now at Dana4Hillsdale.com. That's Dana4Hillsdale.com. Don't delay.
Whether you're a policy wonk, a news junkie, or simply someone hungry for insightful discourse, the Dana Show podcast has your back. Follow Dana on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're going to revoke the bureaucracy rules that they're doing under both Trump and Biden. Trump did bump stock and Biden is doing pistol brace. Those are both unconstitutional, and not even to Second Amendment, and maybe for that, but just the bureaucracy can't legislate. And they're legislating with no congressional authorization. So we're going to repeal both of those because that's going to make a lot of people in jeopardy. Yes, sir.
Good. Hallelujah. That's good news. Although I will say the pistol brace thing got kickstarted under the previous administration. Biden just continued it. So I want to be completely, totally accurate with that. That was Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. He's like, yeah, we're getting rid of that stuff. Oh, my gosh. You know what? You know how you get into best friend territory with me when you start going, maybe we should look at abolishing the ATF and maybe abolish that and abolish the IRS, too. Oh, my gosh. Then that's when we become best friends. Speaking of Biden guns, wait a minute. What does he say? Didn't we have this? Or, but did I make this cut up in my head?
No, we haven't.
Okay, that's right. Okay. It's been a weird. Okay, this right here. I need this so bad. I want whatever this is. It sounds like the blunderbuss of all blunderbusses or something. I don't know. Audio soundbite 11.
Who in God's name needs a weapon with 100 rounds in a chamber?
What? Where?
Where is the gun that has the 100 rounds in the chamber? So how many chambers are there?
100.
100 rounds in the chamber. How big is the barrel for that? Has 111 rounds in the chamber. What was the thing that he said like a week ago? It was like super kook. It was super kooky. Something, I can't remember what he said. And I was like, where's that gun at?
No, it was one about putting a pistol brace on a gun and somehow it makes the round come out faster.
Yes, but he also was talking about the mags, the handguns with like a 1,000 round mag or something. And I'm like, where is that? Like, is it a drum mag, a big giant drum mag? Can you imagine all the drums you'd have on that? Oh, man. Like, where's that at? Does it feed it out of the ether? Does it just pull the bullets out and feed it up into the... I'm just wondering. The rounds and feed them up into... To hear him talk about guns is like hearing me talk about football. Again, I actually know more about football than Joe Biden knows about guns. And I don't know anything about football. Like, I couldn't tell. Kane, ask me a question right now about football. Right now. Ask me a football question.
All right. Who is the... This will be super easy. Who's the person... Who is the one who hikes the ball to the quarterback? What's his position called?
The guy who bends over and shoves it between his legs?
Yes, that guy.
Shut up, Juan. Juan's like, I'm Puerto Rican and I know what this is. It is the hiker?
The hiker? He's the center.
Everyone out there
is the center. Yeah.
The center?
Yeah, the center.
Oh, center. I would never have guessed that. I don't know. See, but Biden, I still know more about football than Biden knows about guns. Do me a two-for. Give me another one. Give me another one. Right, maybe I'll get this one. Okay.
All right. What's the position call where the quarterback is throwing to the guy who's been running downfield?
Like
he's throwing to that guy to catch it for a touchdown, right? What's that position? The guy running downfield to take the ball from, you know, receive the pass. Sort of like in the name right there. To
is it a receiver?
Yes, a wide receiver. Yes, wide receiver.
Is there like a narrow receiver?
No, no. There
just
isn't.
A wide one.
Yeah, just the wide ones.
Okay.
The only that's all right.
I
just
see.
Have.
See, I knew that. Right. I still know more about Which football than Joe Biden knows more about guns.
Yeah, exactly right.
So, you know, everyone out there who are major football fans are dying right now. Don't you send me your hate mail or I'm going to write football questions that will kill you on it and send it back to you. That's what will happen. I'll give you football questions that'll make your brain turn into a pretzel. And then you're going to be like, I can't. Every time my husband tries to explain it to me, I think sometimes, if there's never been any regret in this man's heart after 23 years of marriage. But when I ask him questions about football or when he tries to explain stuff to me and then I ask him a question that has to do with something that he first started with, I think he dies inside a little bit. It's like it's the worst expression. I think it's a worse feeling than if you're a dad and you're watching your sons play catch and you realize they can't catch. I think it's like worse than that feeling. Anyway, so I still know more about football than Joe Biden knows about guns. 100 rounds in the chamber. How the hell get in there, Joe? It's one of the magical guns. What is that? I want that. Is that like the God gun from COD? Like, what's that? All right, we got today in stupidity.
All right. Well, we might as well pile on.
Yeah.
Sir President Joe Biden.
Get it.
This one is, this is cut 15, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Biden says now that he saw two men kissing on the street in Delaware in the 1960s. This was him rambling recently. Listen.
Oh, boy.
I remember he's dropping me off. I wanted to be, I wanted to work in the projects as a lifeguard on the east side of Wilmington. And he was dropping me off on his way to work at the city hall to go get an application to be a lifeguard there. And as I got out of the car at the four corners in the center of town, two men, turns out one going to the Brandywine, one was the work
what
for
the hell?
This is our president.
The show's going to end.
They're the work for this company. This is back when I was a
That's
kid.
Him.
What is he talking about? I don't even know. Oh, man. All right, folks, that does it for us today. Have a wonderful night. Sign up for the newsletter, chapter and verse over at Substack. Find us on Facebook, YouTube, like, and subscribe. Back with you tomorrow.